Well, thanks a lot for these great presentations. I think you just heard and witnessed two very interesting examples of something that is called circulationism. So in this case, it's 3D objects circulating through the internet, through digital space, being used by people, being uploaded by people, being used by people, and altered and reinserted into the circulation. Starting with this image, I don't want to say much more about it. This is a project by Moreshin Alayari and Daniel Roark. They published the 3D Additivist Manifesto in 2015. It was actually shown in a later version as the 3D Additivist Cookbook here in the exhibition I curated early this year, where actually Mark Leckie also contributed one of his 3D scans from actually what you said in the beginning from his project. So, let me start and maybe get back to some of the points that Katja mentioned, and so maybe it's a good way of starting our discussion. In general, I rarely use the word ready-made in my curatorial and also in my theoretical practice. Also, I personally never hear artists talking about or explicitly mentioning the ready-made. Maybe this is because we live in a so-called post-ready-made time. The ready-made as a concept is so ubiquitous today, so everywhere, that in my opinion it is pretty useless as a critical category. However, as we have a conference on the ready-made, if you want to stick, and with Dieter we have been discussing, and Bernd Scherer as well, a long time, if you want to stick to the term ready-made for describing contemporary artist practice, I would say that the ready-made concerns the material as well as digital objects alike, as we have seen in the two previous presentations. If we talk about the value of the concept of the ready-made in the digital era, my subjective focus would be rather on the changing nature or the changing materiality of the object formerly called the ready-made. To put it more precisely, I am personally interested in the increasing alienness, if you wish, alienness of the industrially produced ready-made material that constitutes these objects. Lyotard called these new kinds of materials les immatériaux, that's a very old term dating back from the 80s, immaterials, and with this he was describing matter that looks familiar but that has been taken apart and reassembled, put together again, and in this process has been equipped with new qualities, with entirely new qualities. That's also what I've been addressing in this exhibition, alien matter. Another question, or rather contradiction, I find interesting is, how can an object be a ready-made if its material shape is constantly changing, or if its immaterial shape is constantly changing? Can a shapeshifter become a ready-made? Just think about this really famous figure of the Terminator, consisting of intelligent quicksilver constantly dissolving and reassuming shape or reassembling. Digital objects, and no matter really whether they are 2D or 3D, are subject to constant change. What does it mean for the ready-made? Also, objects tend to not be passive anymore, but are becoming active agents. And it would be interesting to ask how this actually does affect the notion of the ready-made. So I'm coming back to the 6 points you were making, and I'm trying to expand a little bit, and I'm trying to be very short. I think anything today, any object or text or image or process or algorithm, even behavior or movement, can become a ready-made, because objects, texts, images, processes, algorithms, behaviors, and movements have become, in many cases, the property of corporations. And this was also very interesting in the last presentation by Matthew, the Mickey Mouse figure, obviously, and also the statues from the museums. They have been turned into entities that resemble industrial ready-mades. It indeed does not matter whether the selected object, and again, I spare you the long line of things, a list of things I made, it does not matter whether the selected object is unique or mass-produced. We have already seen this in appropriation art since the 1970s in the work, for example, of the, if you have time, in Berlin here, in the Museum of American Art, where there's a very interesting doorman working, Goran Djordjevic. But also, maybe as a recent example I'm showing you here, it's a work by Julien Prévieux, who it's called What Shall We Do Next?, where he worked with patented movements in order to operate machines, or, you know, what to do with a mobile phone, how to kind of use it. And he made a choreography out of these patented movements, out of these ready-mades. So obviously, I would say there's no difference between 2D and 3D. Also, I think 3D printing is not a precondition for a digital ready-made, so I think it's not depending on the material shape or on the materiality. I think we are way beyond the material or the visible or the static object today. And in his lecture about the long tail, Mark Leckie calls it the dematerialization of rigid matter. And he's following a very interesting manifesto I didn't know about before. It's the Dimensionist Manifesto from 1936 by a Hungarian, artist, Károly Szirató. And just a short quote by Mark Leckie: all our goods and communications become increasingly abstracted from their physical forms. We find ourselves moving closer to the realm of thought than the world of things, moving up into the cloud. So that was my first point. Second point, of course, selection. Very interesting. Selection is a very interesting aspect. Let's ask whether Duchamp's notion of a disinterested selection could possibly be found in current tendencies to delegate the process of selection to algorithms and bots. I'm just giving you an example. So in January 2015, the Swiss authorities confiscated a computer at the Kunsthalle St. Gallen in Switzerland. The confiscated machine, or rather the Mediengruppe Bitnik's bot installed on this device, was part of the exhibition The Darknet, From Memes to Onionland. Very strange title. What was the crime it had committed? And I think we are going to talk a bit more about the legal aspects as well. For the duration of the exhibition, Mediengruppe Bitnik, so the artists, had sent a software bot sitting on this machine. They had sent this shopping bot on a shopping spree in the deep web. Cunningly named Random Darknet Shopper, it had a budget of $100 in bitcoins weekly, which it spent on randomly chosen items from the deep web shop Agora. And maybe for those of you who don't know, the deep web or the darknet is so-called dark part of the internet that is not indexed by search engines. The Random Darknet Shopper bought mostly, obviously, illegal brand products and had these products delivered directly into the exhibition space. Fake Diesel jeans, fake Nike sneakers, and fake Louis Vuitton handbags. duty-free cigarettes, a scan of a Hungarian passport, a master key of the London Fire Department, as well as real ecstasy pills, vacuum wrapped in an inconspicuously looking DVD case. These goods were meticulously documented, as you can see here, and presented in the exhibition, including their packaging and wrapping. On the morning of January 12th, obviously the day after the exhibition was closed, the public prosecutor's office of St. Gallen seized and sealed the work. In his review of the work in The Guardian, Mike Power asked, and I quote, "Can a robot or piece of software be jailed if it commits a crime? Where does legal culpability lie if code is criminal by design or default? What if a robot buys drugs, weapons, or hacking equipment and has sent them to you and police intercept the package?" So, quote ends. These questions, of course, became very virulent. Indeed, also the artists asked, what does it mean for a society when there are robots which act autonomously? Who is liable when a robot breaks the law on its own initiative? And we could add, who and where is the legal person or subject? It was precisely these questions that were discussed with the public prosecutor, between the public prosecutor and the artists. Of course, you want to know the end of the story. The random darknet shopper was finally released in mid-April 2015. It was returned to the artists with all the goods except the ecstasy pills, and the charges were dropped. The public prosecutor explained that the bot's intention was not to pursue a commercial activity, but rather to address urgent questions around the changing role of technology in society. When I heard this, I actually commented, I think on Facebook or Twitter, like, that's a good art critic, actually. So now if we come back to our given topic, we could ask whether Duchamp's notion of a disinterested selection could possibly be found in current tendencies to delegate the process of selection to algorithms and bots. It sounds tempting. I find it very tempting. However, when talking about delegated action, one could ask whether this really is a disinterested selection, or whether algorithms are not rather interested because they have been programmed to follow certain goals. An algorithm is not the same thing as a chance operation. So, third point, and then I will only briefly touch upon the fourth and the final points you made. But the blanks, another very interesting topic. So process versus product. So we are, of course, talking about putting into question the made aspect of the ready-made, right? So let me give you another example. Nicolas Maigret and Maria Roshkovska's predictive art bot, programmed in 2016, and presented also here at HKW in early 2017. It's an algorithm that uses current discourse as a basis to create concepts for artistic projects and at times prophesize absurd future trajectories for art. So just to explain you, it taps into big data, like online blogs on contemporary art, magazines, we all know them, and it uses the content of these magazines and these blogs as big data, and it tries to recognize patterns. And from what it recognizes, it tries to produce ready-mades, let's say, but as concepts. And this is what is then put on Twitter. So algorithms are now widely used in different fields to make predictions using data analysis, statistical analysis and pattern recognition for applications including the purchasing behavior of particular groups or global market developments and even potential crimes. Crime prediction is very, very, very important. So in contrast to crime prediction, the predictive art bot is a specialist in making art forecasts, published daily on Twitter, you can follow it, which are meant to expand the limited human imagination with new non-human perspectives. As a parody of transhumanist prophecies, the predictive art bot liberates artists from the constraints of creativity and develops ideas not yet implemented or conceived of by humans. This is what the artists very clearly say. They're very happy about the fact that the bot is working instead of them, and so they can just watch it working, and sometimes they pick up an idea. Yeah, the idea of the reverse ready-made, I think it was mentioned also by Bernd Scherer. That's also part of this project because they're putting, as I said before, they are publishing it on Twitter. And actually the most popular concept that gets the most likes is then being realized. But again, let us come back to the question of this panel. So what instance could be called ready-made in this project? Could the concepts produced by the bot be called ready-mades? Or is it the algorithm itself producing a stream of ready-made concepts? So I'm just briefly mentioning the two last points, and then I think we can directly go into the discussion. The question of multiples or objects in plural. Ready-mades, and again, if you insist on using the term, tend to exist as multiples if you look at the digital context. Circulationism, that's what we have seen in the two presentations now. If linked to digital files, as the files themselves are shapeshifters, the material realizations have to be constantly updated. They have to be multiples. It's like versionings. Yeah. So, and the unique or limited ready-made seems to be a demand coming from or condition put forward by the art market, maybe. Last point about online presentations. Katja, you are asking whether a ready-made is bound to the institutional context of the art exhibition or whether a ready-made can survive online. Very interesting. you're asking if a ready-made is at all thinkable outside the museum or the gallery context, and my answer would be yes. It would be yes, because it is thinkable outside the museum or the gallery context, but not outside the art context. Yeah, I think museum or gallery is not the only institution, if you want to call it an institution, that represents the art context. Yeah, and about going underground, and then I'm finished. It's also a nice link to Matthew, who mentioned Jody. I think this idea of, you know, putting or using the quote by Duchamp, going underground, like going online, this might have been true in the 1990s when net art started. Jody is also part of net art. At that time, they were like partisans on the net. It was kind of clandestine and underground. But I don't think that today it's can be equaled to going underground. This is more like going public, I would say. Okay, thank you very much.